Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, good evening, everyone. Welcome to Violet Reiki Radio. I am so happy to bring this show to you, and I would like to give thanks to the founders of the Theka Network for giving me this wonderful opportunity to bring this show to the public, where we will be talking about Reiki and all things surrounding Reiki. We'll also be talking about things for your own personal and spiritual growth. We will be talking about things metaphysical, physical, alternative, holistic, you name it, enlightenment, awakening. We've got the topics here. If anyone would like more information on me, Rose, my practice, Violet Rose Reiki, please go to my website, www.violetrosereiki.com. If you have any Reiki questions, email me at rose@violetrosereiki.com, and I'd be happy to answer your questions. Again, access the website if you'd like any of our wonderful services. Also on Facebook, I have a page which is called Reiki Ward. Reiki Ward was formed 3 years ago to provide distance healing for all, for free, all around the globe. And this is for humans, animals alike. Reiki Ward performs 3 rounds of healing daily at a minimum. And we also place your Reiki healing requests on our healing crystal grid for 24/7 energy work and healing. So that's what we're all about. If you'd like to call into the studio and chat with my guest, Yanni Maniates, or myself, or both of us, if you have questions, if you have comments, the call-in number here is 347-677-0699. And let's see. Well, let me just tell you, before we bring him in here, Yanni has been teaching meditation and intuitive development, healing, and metaphysical subjects for over 20 years. As well, Yanni has been doing intuitive counseling for the past 15 years. Yanni is certified in numerous holistic modalities and has studied and practiced many esoteric healing modalities as well. The primary focus of all his work is to help people experience the still small voice within, or as he calls it, the embrace. For it is where Yanni believes that all true healing originates. And we're going to speak to Yanni more about that when we have him on air here. Let's see if we have Yanni. Okay. Good evening, 215. You're on the air. Hello? I see this caller had a question, but I don't think the caller is there. Hello? Okay, we had someone with a question mark and looked like they had a question, but when I clicked in, they didn't. Might be a connection problem. I don't know. Let's try again. 215, you're on the air with Violet Reiki Radio. Okay, that might even be Yanni calling in and having a problem because it is a Pennsylvania area code. Yanni, if you're hearing me, please call back if that 215 was you. we're not in Mercury retrograde, are we? Okay. Well, I can tell you a little bit more about Yanni. Over 20 years ago, Yanni was blessed with an experience of profound, quote, embrace while in meditation, which radically changed his life. Since then, it was crystal clear that he not only wanted to deepen that experience for himself, but also wanted even more to help others find it for themselves. This is why he teaches and has developed numerous programs in intuitive development, meditation, and self-mastery. Yanni's work is focused on integrating the divine feminine into one's life. Yanni has many published books, articles. He has a 3 meditation CD set. As well, he's created certification programs in meditation and intuitive development. Okay, let's try this again. Let's see who we got here. Hello, 215, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Yanni.
Hi, Yanni.
Hi. Thanks for telling me about myself.
You're welcome. Well, just in case you forgot, you know.
Yeah, in case I forgot I wrote it, right.
Did I hang up on you? Were you the person that I said, well, let me just hang up, maybe they'll call back?
No.
It wasn't you. Okay. And it was probably someone else.
Well, I did hit a button. Maybe, I don't know. Who knows? But anyhow, here we are.
I'm not the most technological of people.
Mm-hmm.
So,
no problem.
It's amazing they let me do this by myself and whatever. It's a bit scary.
The universe believes in you, so that's a good thing.
That's a good thing, yeah. Okay, so I give my audience a little bit of a hint as to, you know, who you are, what you are, what you do. But why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? And I also would like to discuss this, the embrace.
Okay, sure. Mm-hmm. Well, where does one begin? Somewhere.
The day you were born, no.
Yeah, no. I mean, I was raised in a certifiably insane Southern Mediterranean family. And the gift of all that was I knew that I would be dead at a young age if I didn't try to figure out how to calm down. The adult models that I had around me certainly did not emulate any sense of calmness or sanity. And I had enough sense, you know, to realize that I'd better do something about this or I'll be a huge mess for the rest of my life and or I won't have much of the rest of my life. And let me say a little more too. I was also an only child. I was kind of there by myself. Plus to add another little piece to this, because it explains my story and why I got into this stuff and why this intuitive stuff became easy for me, why my search for that embrace or God or whatever was such a big deal to me. even when I was very young. My mom, bless her soul, was someone who really didn't know how to parent very well, but really was good at telling me everything that was wrong with me and or chasing after me to just give me a hard time. It's more elaborate than that. I was never physically abused, but emotionally I was significantly. And so as a result, I kind of learned how to read energy from a very little kid. I could tell what was coming. And I had to know, the only way I could feel safe was to think I could at least anticipate the next, kind of verbal, kind of barrage that was going to come at me. That somehow made me feel safe, knowing it was coming. And not that I could do much about it because I was, I was young. But what it did is it allowed me to become very sensitive to energy and very aware of energy. Unfortunately, initially, I didn't have any boundaries. I didn't know where I began and ended and where my mom did or other people did. Only later, as I got into my later teens into my 20s, I was able to kind of really get a better sense, through psychoanalysis and reading a lot of stuff and, high school, college and, exploring things and all that, figure out what had really been happening there, and then began to realize that there were no boundaries and that that was not a good thing.
No.
Even though there was a gift in there. And so then I began to understand how to create healthy energetic boundaries, not armoring, but healthy energetic boundaries. And then to be able to turn, what was seemingly, a challenge into kind of turning it into a gift. So I can pick up on stuff anytime I choose to switch gears out of my mind and, go out of my mind and into my senses. I can pick up on stuff very easily, and I attribute that to my master teacher, my mom. That's how I learned all that. And also because of her and the rest of the extended family. Again, I was an only kid. And again, being an only kid with a mom who was after anything she could find, and I was the only thing she could find, it was a challenge. It also led me to wanting to find a way to relax. And so back in the days, when I was into this stuff, starting in my teenage years, my young teenage years, it was not something very common or easy to access, but it didn't matter. I did what, the reading I had to, and found ways and went to places where I could kind of begin to learn how to meditate and began to realize that meditation is a lot more than just simply, learning how to chill.
Right, right.
It's a real life skill, just as learning how to use your intuition is. And please feel free to, zip my lip at any point you want and, get me going in another direction or get me off the direction.
It's funny. I will do that. But what I'm hearing and I'm saying, wow, the similarities, because I was emotionally abused as a child and didn't know it until I was about 46 years old. And when I went into therapy at that age, middle age, and my counselor said, you were abused, I said, oh, no, I wasn't, none of that
right.
physical stuff and none of that beating. And he said, no, you were emotionally abused. Well, you can knock me over with a feather. And it was amazing. I was like, and like then a flood of things that, I had questioned always or didn't understand started making sense. I'm also hearing you're also a fellow wounded healer. So this is fascinating. So go on, and at the appropriate time, I'll give you a nudge.
I'll zip the lip. The lips, I got two of them here. Anyhow, for me, there was, it's hard to, because of the kind of upbringing I was in, I had many, many vivid very real dreams where, you know, as years have gone by, I began to realize they were really visitations and folks, you know, in spirit who were just trying to, one, help me get through this, and then, two, teach me, you know, kind of stuff. So, and also, you know, in that environment, I didn't, you know, I don't know how to explain it. This, you know, my mom and I do, I really don't have any animosity. I mean, she's deceased now, and I have no animosity toward her. I really don't feel I do. I mean, I don't think it's just denial at this point. It's my own work with her and my understanding of her own environment and situation. Didn't know how to love, you know, basically, simply because she never was loved. And right. So that desire to find that love, you know, not looking for love in all the wrong places kind of a deal, but mm-hmm. that desire and that knowing on some level but not having the experience that the basic underlying, you know, essence of everything and the essential experience that anyone can have is a feeling of love. Or after I finally had the experience that what I've come to label as the embrace. And so anyhow, you know, through my teens and my 20s and whatever, I very much so invested myself, whatever else I was doing, you know, for a living and or just bumming, whatever it was. You know, college students bum, and then after they graduate, they bum further, and then eventually, well, at least some of them anyhow, and then they eventually get into doing something. And so I just kept exploring this inner world, and excuse me, trying to kind of make sense of, you know, my childhood, and to heal it for myself, as well as to find this elusive peace that I knew was there, you know. And it's not that I couldn't feel it from some other people or would have glimpses of it. It just, I knew that it was more than an intellectual construct or a momentary kind of fleeting experience. And so anyhow, at some point down the line, and this was in the late 80s, I was in a mediumship development class, and call it intuitive development, but it was mediumship. And the class was wonderful. And we had, you know, it was a small group, 8 or 10 people, and we all were just having these great experiences of letting stuff flow through, but also feeling things and, you know, the whole nine yards. And one day, one evening, I mean, in the class, and I used to travel 3 hours to get to this class, by the way, because there weren't any around where I was. Even though I lived in New York City at the time, at least I didn't know of any. I traveled all the way down to Pennsylvania, which is not where I live, which is kind of nuts. But anyhow, I was in a very deep meditative state, and I guess it really, why not just mention it, one of the guides that kind of worked with the medium that I was studying with was Saint Germain. And so I've had many experiences with him, had them back then and had them subsequently.
Oh, wow.
All of a sudden, kind of, I really felt his presence, you know, and then the next thing I knew, that which I now can only label as an embrace began to, you know, occur for me. And it was this profound sense, words are useless, but of belonging. It was visceral in that I felt it throughout my body. My body was just humming. I felt an expansion and a contraction. I felt a total unity, a oneness, a full sense of acceptance. I don't know. I've always been at a loss for words. I mean, I can blab my head off here for hours, but I mean, a loss of words, you know, to try to kind of explain this experience. But over the years, as I have my best explained it in my classes, and as I've done my best to share with people or point to ways which, you know, they might want to or could find it, you know, it was so amazingly overwhelming. And what I realize I'm trying to say here is I was very fortunate because of that background I shared, you know, as a child, that something kept telling me there is this. You know, most people don't even know there is this. I mean, everyone right. knows there is at a certain level. I mean, mm-hmm. because it is. And it is who we are. You know, it is who I am. It is who everybody am. Okay. But for too many people, it doesn't get conscious enough that they're aware that it's something they can experience or something that they might want to kind of open the door to experiencing. I don't want to say try to experience or seek to experience, because it's something that comes to you. It's something you go after. It's something you allow. It's something that, you know, is. It's not something you do. It's something you be. You know?
I mean, maybe part of it is that we don't realize, I guess the younger it happens to you, or maybe when you get to mid-teens, because like with me, we don't realize that this is something we can control. Like when it comes at you, you're kind of like, oh my God, what do I do with this?
Right.
But then you learn how to control it. You learn how to take the reins. And this way, it's not like a runaway caravan anymore, which it can be in the beginning stages.
Well, you know, my experience of it was different than that. I didn't feel I felt overwhelmed by the love, but not, you know, I've had Kundalini experiences where I really did feel like I was losing, you know, leaving my body and never going to come back again. You know, mm-hmm. stuff was floating out of my head and whatever. And that stuff was not comfortable, and I didn't feel I could, you know, I had any mastery over. I don't like the word control, but anyhow, whatever.
Right.
This experience, though, for me, you know, came in very gently also. And as it continues to, you know, as it continues to, it always just comes in knocking first. I don't know how to, you know, whatever that might mean. You know, again, I wasn't expecting it. It was overwhelming, you know, on a deep, deep level on some level. But it didn't feel like it was kind of, I don't want to use the word invasive because I don't think that's what you're implying. It somehow felt it fit. You know, it wasn't too big or too small. It
right.
fit. And so when I share with other people, you know, what I'm trying to help a lot of people understand is that it's there, okay? And just ask and it will come, you know? And the way you ask is not with your mind but with your heart. And the way you ask with your heart is by simply quieting your mind and opening your heart, which really, for me, is a definition of what meditation is.
Mm-hmm.
And we're so full of noise, you know, we're so full of crap.
Yeah.
You know, all these thoughts and, geez, and my, you know, dialogues and monologues and, you know, and fears and you know, past hurts and future anticipatory anxieties about anything and everybody and anything and whatever. And when we can learn, you know, that one, all that nonsense is going on and it isn't really necessary. You know, yeah, you've been trained. Yeah, you think this is the way it is, but no, it isn't. You know, it's not natural, actually. That if you just quiet the mind, you know, open the heart, you drop into this place because that's the key. That's the doorway into it. And sure, sometimes it'll happen spontaneously, you know, seemingly out of nowhere or spontaneously. Well, that's because you've done that. You opened the door. And
right,
then
right.
And you stepped in. And
so now with all this electronic stuff, it you know, you could keep your mind chattering away and never have silence at all.
Well, no, that's the problem with, yeah, the technological age, and that's, what happens, I mean, I watch my son, and I mean, you know, that his iPhone, you know, is his lifeline to all these friends, which is great, you know, that he's got, you know, friends, but it's just this constant technology, you know, and the sit, and, you know, we try to share this stuff with him, and he does to some degree, he is to some degree open to it, but still, it you know, this pace and this focus on the mind and this whole focus on left brain education. I remember reading somewhere we get 18,000 hours of left brain education by the time we get out of high school. I mean, I didn't sit there and calculate that. And we get very little right brain education.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
The right brain education, you know, or learning how to use that is in effect tapping into one, your intuitive gifts and or your, you know, your ability, you know, your meditative states. And so, you know, it's just unfortunate that, you know, we don't realize that, and this is a Deepak Chopra quote, you know, we're not human thinkings, we're human beings.
Right.
And, you know, we're meant, you know, as I go on here, keep talking away here, we're not meant to plan out our lives with our minds and
script them.
We are meant to quiet our minds and hear what the highest good or the next inspiration is for us to do that will make our lives more joyful and more serving. You know, more in line, you know, with the highest good for everyone. You know,
exactly.
When it's not about perspiring through life, it's inspiring through life. You know,
yep.
It's living, you know, an inspired life. Again, not an inspired one. I mean, one of my favorite quotes is from Eileen Cady, who is one of the co-founders of the Finhorn community. I'm not going to explain what that is, but it's cease trying to work things out with your mind that will get you nowhere. Let your whole life be led by intuition. Let your whole life be a revelation.
Well, that's funny
growing
up, I mean, I'm a natural born, what we call a natural born psychic. It was a gift. I had it from birth. I was hearing spirit at 3 years old, and I just followed it, and it was a natural thing to me until people came along and said, oh, no, don't do that. People will think you're crazy. Don't tell people you see auras. They'll think you're a wacko. You know, don't. So I heard about, you know, I'd say maybe 10 years of don't, and I shut it all down. And it's amazing because I was always led by that, and all on the right brain. And school was difficult for me because I was so, you know, led by my right brain, not the left. I struggled with that. And, you know, but, you know, you had to assimilate. I wanted to be a normal person. So I shut that all down, and I had become what they call the closet psychic. I would do readings for friends. I would, you know, read for family and stuff. But I would never tell anybody I had this ability because it was always looked upon as, no, there's something wrong. And it amazes me, and I love it, and I'm embracing it fully that now it's being so accepted. And it's like, finally, out of the closet. We have a caller. Let me see who would like to speak to us. Good evening. You're on the air with Violet Reiki Radio, Rose, and Yanni Maniatis. Hello? Oh, my God, the call dropped.
Uh-huh.
Well, such is the way of radio.
But,
well,
you know,
hopefully she'll be back. But the other thing is, you know, I've lost everything twice in my life, and what you're saying about planning, and it doesn't pay. And people say to me, well, what are your plans for next week? And I always say, I don't have any. What do you mean? I don't have any. I gave that up years ago. No planning.
Yeah, I mean, one of my favorite quotes by Thomas Merton is, life's not a problem to be solved, but a mystery to be lived. And
exactly.
You know, and another Deepak Chopra thing, you don't find God in the known, or goddess, whatever you want to call that energy. Mm. You find her or him in the unknown. You know, what you know, and that's already been, an integration your left brain has done. God is in the unknown, because that's where creativity lies. That's where potential lies, you know. And the word potential means potency. Your power lies not in, you know, what you try to control, but what you allow yourself to flow through. There are these energy currents that want to carry you, you know. I mean, you may have an idea, and I mean, I'm sure everyone does have an idea, and it's meant to fly. But if you hold on to the ground, your thoughts about how you're going to fly, you ain't going nowhere, honey. But if you just open up,
exactly,
you'll catch
and
will fly, and things will flow. And, yeah, you will end up in eddies and currents, and, you know, you're not guaranteed anything other than the ride, okay? And that you will ultimately land, in the ocean where you began.
And everybody thinks they're just going to go false, black, and that's it.
Yeah, so, I mean, life is meant, to be one, new now after another. One incredibly potentiated new moment that doesn't carry the past with it and doesn't anticipate what it'll be. It just allows it to be what it is. And, that's a lot easier said than done, because we are living, in a third-dimensional plane, and there are, physical realities we do need to be, in touch with and responsible to. And, what I guess I want to clarify in my remarks here, I'm not talking about spiritual bypass where you live in spirit and you can't pay the rent, you can't, you don't know how to have any kind of relationships. You're just a walking Mr. Magoo or Mrs. Magoo goofing up all over the place and causing trouble. No,
right.
You integrate the worlds, and you find ways to make yourself be able to flow through this physical world, be not of it. And even though you're in it, you're not of it. But, it's possible. It really is possible to live a life of joy and to live a life of feeling connected, and to live a life where the essence of your being you never forget is this embrace or this love. And then the rest of it just happens, and the rest of it is an opportunity to learn and to grow. So, it's like, I don't know where you want to go with this, but I always like to kind of share things for people to, be able to kind of, I don't know, maybe people who are way further advanced than we are, so I have nothing to share, and or there may be people, for whom, they're in the process of making sense of these things. I feel prompted to just say that, this whole piece, I know where I want to go. I have two places I want to go with this, so let me see what I want to do with this. I'm sure some of the listeners here and or yourself, you've heard of, the Abraham kind of phenomenon.
Right.
And the whole deliberate creation and the law of attraction and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And all that stuff, I listen to a lot of it, and, it's got a lot of strengths to it and, some pieces that need strengthening. But everything does. No system is perfect. No teacher knows everything, for that matter. We're all works in progress. But, what I've come to realize is that to be a deliberate creator doesn't mean that I plan out what I want and say I want my red BMW and universe provided to me. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But for me to be a deliberate creator, it means that each moment I quiet my mind, I open my heart, and I listen to that still small voice within me, and I act on its inspirations and promptings. I gain a self-confidence, capital S-E-L-F, in myself and not in my little self-confidences about my external accomplishments. And if I can, moment to moment, or at least, you know, every few days, every few hours, every hour maybe, you know, tune in, every moment preferably, and just listen. Then I'm guided not from fear, not from old belief systems or patterns, not from somebody else's desires and projections upon me, but I'm inspired by that deep essence within me. And that's the only way I can ever be happy, or the only way I can really be in my path. You know, so what I suggest to people is that as often as you can remember, just stop. Shut up. Stop. Tell your mind to just, you know, zip its big fat lips, you know, and just stop and ask yourself, am I relaxed? Am I breathing easily? Not am I breathing. You're breathing. Am I breathing easily? Do you even know what breathing easily means? And if you don't know what breathing easily means, I think you better go find out what breathing easily means.
Mm-hmm.
And go take, you know, courses on meditation and learning how to breathe.
Or breathing fully. I mean, even if you stop during the day a couple of times, just to take a couple of really deep down
right.
to the diaphragm and then completely out of the lungs, do that like a half a dozen times. It'll make
a difference.
It's
huge. Yeah, because most people are breathing 12 to 14 breaths a minute, and I don't even mean when they're really hypering. And that is above, way above what you know would be a relaxed state. It should be around 8 breaths a minute. And again, if you sit there and count your breaths, you're going to slow them down and not know what you're really doing. But am I relaxed? Am I breathing easily? Am I moving or acting with awareness and refinement? Do I know what heaven's name I'm doing at the moment? Or am I just in one of these kind of, you know, knee-jerk reactive modes, and I'm just doing for the sake of doing? You know, I'm doing all over myself. I'm shoulding all over myself. You know, or am I aware? Do I know it? So,
right.
Am I shoulding on myself again? You know,
and
then usually you are. You know, and what am I feeling? Are you feeling, you know, connected? Are you feeling peaceful? Are you feeling like a total messed up Southern Mediterranean idiot? You know, or like I would say I'm the dumb Greek from Queens. You know, from New York. Whatever.
I can relate. We were the crazy Italian family. You know, the Italian Sicilian Mediterranean lunatics too. You know, totally dysfunctional family. You know, but to us that was normal. And it's funny, I remember my ex-husband said to me when I had gone to therapy and found all this stuff out, he said, oh, well, now you're going to blame your parents, because I had happened to say to him, you know, well, you know, oh, you know, it all starts with my parents, my family. Well, now you're going to blame them. I said, I'm not blaming anything, but at least I could see the roots of where this comes from. And now I can do some gardening and kind of pull out the weed roots.
And there's no judgment on, I mean, these are folks, and however you want to look at it, that you chose.
Mm-hmm.
One way, you know, and again, I wouldn't have the sensitivity I have if it weren't for the kind of, upbringing I had and the kind of, just the way my mom dealt with me. I wouldn't. And,
right.
You know, and for me too, as a being in a male body, I mean, this is even weirder to be doing. Least of all when I was, you know, starting to teach stuff 25 years ago, and subsequently still. I mean, you know, 10% of the people who show up at the classes are male.
Wow.
And, you know, so it's still, you know, it's still rather interesting, and. You know, my son plays a lot of baseball, and he's, you know, really, he's good at it. And so I, for over these, you know, he's now a junior in high school, but for the last 10, 12 years when he's been playing when he was younger, you know, go hang out and help and assistance and the coach, et cetera, all this. You know, to be in that environment with people, it's fine because I learned a lot about it. I used to love playing baseball when I was a kid too. But it's interesting, like, the people that are involved with it are not ones who could kind of get who I was. And care, you know, I didn't care. And over time, they just ended up liking me, but they didn't get me. And that was fine. I didn't really care. You know, right. So it's been interesting for me as well, is what I'm trying to say, to you know, not only back in the days when, 25 years ago, when this wasn't, you know, current and acceptable, like you were saying, that now you can find it anywhere, though there are still segments of the population that think this is all still kind of stupid stuff.
Yes.
Back then, it was really interesting. But because it was so clear to me that it was, you know, it gave me this essential experience that I referred to, I didn't care. You know, so that's why, too, I mean, I know in the many people I've taught that there have been people, you know, and obviously many were female, that it still wasn't even easy to accept it, you know, in that, you know, even as a female, partly because, again, as you were saying, there are all these people around them, including husbands and kids and an extended family that say you're nuts, you know, or you're wrong, or you're being led down the wrong path, or who is this weirdo, or what's going on?
Right.
So there's still the stigma, you know, however better it is, however much better it is, but it's still there.
Definitely.
What I wanted to say, besides kind of wanting to share with people that really stop, just shut up. Tell yourself. That's what I do. I just go to myself, well, you just shut up already, and ask myself, am I relaxed? Am I breathing easily? Am I moving or acting with refinement and awareness? How, what am I feeling? And another thing I'd like to just share is a technique that I use and that maybe would be helpful for people is that, you know, I mean, when most people wake up in the morning, and this, and you know, I'm one of those most, and I think it's almost everybody does this, you wake up, and all of a sudden your to-do list comes flying through. You know, your to-do list comes flying through,
right.
And you go, oh, shoot, I'm awake. You know, you get up and whatever you do, bathroom, whatever, blah, blah, blah. You know, you're just running through the day. Well, what I've learned to do and what I suggest people do is just lie in bed for a few minutes, you know, and then ask yourself, what do I want to experience today? What do I want to be rather than what I want to do? I'm really good at do-do lists. You know, I really know how to do this. I've been doing it long enough. What do I want to be or feel today? Do I want to feel peaceful? You know, do I want to feel confident? Do I want to feel love or balance? Or joy, or harmony. What you know, and there's a zillion things you can feel. Which of these do I want to feel today? Okay? And so lie there in your bed for another, you know, this will take you maybe at most 2 minutes, and then breathe in whatever that is. Let's say it's peace. Breathe it in on your in-breath, and then see it on the out-breath just filling your body. And breathe it in on your in-breath, and do it for 7 breaths. And then, you know, whatever you can, over time, you know, you'll learn techniques where, you know, you have a rubber band on your, whatever, your wrist or something on your computer, or, you know, I don't know, whatever those called, post-it pads, wherever you put them all over the place, put them at the end of your nose, wherever you got to put them. I have a longer nose, so, you know, I can see things at the end of it. But anyway, never mind. So what you do is you keep reminding yourself, this is like basically a Buddhist practice, of, wait a minute, my priority today is peace or love or confidence. It's not getting this tenth, thousandth friggin' thing done. Okay?
Right.
Whether it gets done or not is not more important than how I feel about myself or how I feel in general. And what begins to happen is that then you keep, you know, you start to do this more and more, And believe it or not, the to-do list gets done in two ways. It gets shortened because half of it is do-do and should-shoulds, and you really don't need to be doing it. Mm-hmm. And then the other half is stuff you want to do, and you do it. And you know what? You do it because you want to do it, and guess what? It's not any more resistance. It's a flow. And no, is this perfect? Does it totally flow that way all the time? Are there days where, oh, my God, are there things that happen in life that are pretty big challenges and this kind of like, I don't know. Well, no, this will actually help you a little bit through it, you know. But most days, you know, are pretty mundane and similar for most people. Or they're either totally insane and are insane every day the same way, you know. But this is just another way I have found to kind of just quiet my mind and open my heart and decide, you know, let my soul determine that still small voice within me. Let that be what sets the tone for my day and determines my goal or what it is I want to accomplish, rather than my neurotic, you know, kind of programmed, you know, out of control mind that doesn't know what in heaven's names it's doing. It's acting out of fear, mostly. So, anyhow, I just wanted to share that with people.
Well, it's funny, you know, you're talking, and I'm thinking, I grew up with a very highly neurotic mother who was sick. She had every sickness known to man from when she was 19, and it just continued until she passed away at the ripe old age of 81. And she
My mom once made it to 85, and she was a hypochondriac. You know, I was like, I don't get it, but anyhow.
And my father used to say to my mother all the time, "You're going to bury me. You're going to bury me. Don't worry about it." And she'd go, "Oh, no, I'm so sick." And, well, long story short, she did bury him because my dad died at the young age of 69. So
she drove him crazy, yeah.
No, it was his own personal neglect that did that. But,
oh, okay.
Yeah, no, Dad, you know, he didn't want to go for a barium enema. I don't know many people who love drinking that stuff, or back then they used to drink this Chucky, whatever. But he didn't want to go for that. And, you know, he wound up, he had a tumor in his colon that was huge.
Mm.
And by the time they got to it, they thought they got everything, but they didn't. And we know how that went. Mm. So, you know, there was my mom, neurotic as all hell. And then there was my father's sister, who they were best friends. My Aunt Tina, and my Aunt Tina was the exact opposite of my mother. She was very low-key, you know, type B personality, very calm. She did everything slow. She took her time, you know. She really didn't care. Like, she would clean something or clean the house or clean a particular item or something or sew something, whatever. And my mother would say, "Yeah, but you see this? She didn't get it. You see this? This is wrong. You see that?" And my aunt would turn around and say to my mother, "Yeah, but it's better than before." That was her constant saying. And, you know, I used to tend to be more like my mother and get all neurotic over stuff until one day I just couldn't do what I wanted to do the way I wanted to do it, my own neuroses. And I did it my aunt's way. And I remember looking at whatever it was I had accomplished, and I'm like, "You know what? Yeah, it's better than before. And, that's okay by me. You know, there's no need for everything to be perfect." So
Right. Let
it go. I mean, a lot of times the striving for perfection, it's got to be absolutely perfect. To whose definition of perfect?
Right.
Do we really
Right. Know
what perfect is? To who? Where?
Yeah.
You know.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, for whatever the word, whatever this is worth, my undergraduate degree is in classical Greek and Latin, so I'm into kind of etymology and all that nonsense. And interesting, the word perfection in Latin, the etymology is to do thoroughly. That's
right.
All. It's just to do as well as you know, which in effect is to do your best. That's all.
Right.
That's what being perfect is to do your best.
And that's also, like, you know, well, even in Reiki, it's like work hard. Although Don Miguel Ruiz says, you know, do your best, which is a wonderful, that's, I subscribe to that. Do your best, you know?
Yeah.
And that's fine.
Yeah, that's all you got to do.
If you do your best and you say, yes, this is my best, well, you take the stress out of it.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, again, yeah, you got me thinking. My search began with realizing that I was this, you know, totally messed up Southern Mediterranean nuthead, and that, I didn't know where to find a place to feel safe, really, you know, within myself. And I didn't know how to relax. And I had no modeling, obviously, for any of that. And so what ended up happening is, and what I've come to realize, and what I try to share in my work and my classes is, that you never will relax, and you never will feel safe until you experience some, you know, what I call the embrace. Because one word I didn't use to describe the experience was, I was safe. And if you feel safe, then there's nothing to be afraid of. There's nothing to be angry about. There's nothing to be anxious about. There is this complete sense of trust, you know, in the universe, that it is a friendly place. Friendly, it's a loving place. And that you're in its embrace. And you're enormously safe. That was not the, with my mom, I did not feel safe. I felt threatened, you know, 24/7. I know not everyone had that kind of an experience. I know everyone had their own dysfunctional things they had to deal with. But what I do know in my own observation of people over the years is that their neurotic and or dysfunctional behaviors or just simply really nasty behaviors are all stemming from not feeling safe, you know, from not feeling this connection. And so in order to try to control things, and of course you can't control anything other than the way you choose to interpret things, that's the only thing you can quote-unquote control. But that to me, you know, when I said, you know, you were reading my little thingy there when this thing started, mm-hmm. why I wanted to share, you know, that experience with others or share what I got from that experience from others was my desire was to learn how to relax and how to be at peace and how to feel good about myself and all those things. And without that experience, no amount of psychotherapy, no amount of anything, no amount of, whatever, would make one squat of difference, or maybe to make a little bit of a squat of a difference, if I didn't have that experience that I know I can go back to now, that I know is the ground of my being and that I stand on now. It's no
right.
longer, you know, the shifting sands, but it's the bedrock.
I also think that a lot of, like you're saying, safe, and I remember, you know, my therapist had said with me and my ex-husband, he asked us both the same question. Do you feel safe and secure with him, with her? And we each said, no. So it's like, you know, when you don't feel safe and secure, you are feeling threatened. When you're feeling threatened, you go on the offense and, you know, you want to attack. And also I feel that people who have low self-esteem issues also don't feel safe at all. They don't feel safe to express themselves and be themselves. They also don't feel secure in public surroundings and with the general population. And I think that's also why we have a large number of people today in the world who have problems expressing their feelings and their emotions because They also feel threatened, insecure, not safe at all. So this just compounds whatever problems they have that, you know, have them doing this in the first place.
Yeah,
we're really more messed up than we think we are, Yanni.
Well, I realized at one point, you know, that ain't nobody on this planet ain't messed up. And, you know, what you just described is the world scene. You know, wars and this and that and all this absolute nonsense that people put their energy into. And, you know, and it's ultimately because they have no sense, they have no spiritual connection. And, you know, 25 years ago I was saying this, I'm saying it now. I mean, I don't care what anybody says. This is the key, you know, to making a difference in this world. And it's not La La Land. It's not what some, you know, it's not spiritual bypass. It's not ignoring. But it's, you know, real problems and how do we solve them. But we don't solve them from, you know, again, the same level we created them on, as Albert Einstein said. We've got to go to that other level. And we've got to realize that there is that other level. And at that other level, everything is possible and everything can change. And how to kind of, you know, allow enough people, you know, like the 100th monkey kind of thing where if you get enough people who kind of get it, you know,
right.
It just spreads more, you know, because we are all connected. And so, you know, for myself and I know for many others who've been, you know, kind of working on this level for years, and I don't even like to use the word work, but, you know, playing at this level or experimenting at this level, whatever the heck you want to call it, it can and will make a huge difference. Excuse me, let me drink something here. However much it may not look at this point, on many levels. And I know that for millennia, what's held the planet together are these little groups of people in monasteries or in other settings that just keep praying for the earth. Or if people are into believing this, you know, beings that are no longer physical that are also just praying for the earth. You know, because they understand, you know, the earth meaning the whole planet and everybody on it, because they know that the key is people's ability to make this connection. And if enough people can hold this tone, if enough people can get this, even partially, and if enough people can, you know, realize that it's, you know, that it's even there, you know, be open to the possibility that it's there, wow, that light switch can come on and there can be a huge shift.
Definitely.
So,
I mean, there are times where I get frustrated because sometimes, some days, it just seems to me that no matter how many people are praying, are meditating, are pumping out the energies of love and peace and harmony and goodwill and goodness, and tolerance and understanding. Some days it's just like, are we all not getting through? Has everybody turned into an animal? Has everybody lost their common sense? Do they all just want this world to be dark and you know, just negative and horrible? No, like a light bulb will go off in my head and it's like, it might seem like that, but for each positive drop in the ocean, those of us who contribute to it, you know, those drops do add up. So, like, I have to kind of talk myself into don't despair, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, and also, you know, one of the kind of axioms or understandings in all this, too, I've come to see is when I see some of the kind of absolutely ridiculous kind of, what is it? I don't know what word, ideologies that are coming out. I mean, I'm referring to even some religions as ideologies. Some of the crazy ideas or thoughts, some of the radically kind of just absurd things that are surfacing, you know, that are just so wrong and getting so much, you know, a lot of people to kind of buy into some of this stuff. And I'm not being political or anything about that. And when I see some of this stuff, I go, that's proof that the pimple is bursting or the cyst is bursting.
Right.
These underlying archetypal energies, these underlying thought forms that, you know, have just been hidden and really permeated everything we do anyhow, are now being forced to come out and show themselves for what they are and who they are, represented through archetypal type political or business or other figures, you know, whatever, and or through systems or people or movements or whatever. And really, it's just the fact that some of it is just like so absurd that's occurring that I look at it and I say, great, the pimple, you know, the cyst, whatever you want to call it.
The boil has burst or is bursting.
Yeah, well, it's kind of smelly and, you know, unfortunately it happens in divine time, not in our time. But, you know, for me, I as I look at it all, as absurd as it is, as insane as it is, I'm left with hope, you know. And, you know, for myself too, and again, you zip the lip whenever you want here, I know my own understanding, my own knowing, and it's not anybody else's, and I'm not trying to foist it on anyone else, that there's an essential teaching or understanding or wisdom that was there at the get-go, whatever the get-go was, you know, and that is resurfacing now. And it's beyond any ideology. It's beyond any religion. It's beyond any teaching or teacher. It just is, because it always was. And it never had a teacher. It never had a teaching. It just was. And
right.
This is where we're coming to. You know, people speak of the ancient mystery schools, and there's nothing ancient or mysterious about any of it. It always was, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it always will be. And we're coming around back to that was there at the beginning.
That's
was
right.
Where we were at the beginning. And
I'm going to take this opportunity, Yanni, to ask you to kindly zip your lip a second. I'm going to announce the number for people who'd like to call in. You can call in. The number here in studio is 347-677-0699 to speak with Yanni and or myself if you have questions and comments. And we do have a caller on the line, which I'm going to take. Let's see.
Good job.
Good evening, 718. You are on Violet Reiki Radio with Rose and Yanni.
Good evening, Violet Reiki Rose. As always, I enjoy your program immensely, and it even breaks my heart to interrupt. What a subject is a marvelous, marvelous topic tonight, which you know me as well for many years. I relate perfectly to it, and I want to say to your guest, even though I read, you know, his bio on your page, that I don't know if he's considered himself a healer or not, but his work, but just listening to his voice, and you know I know a lot by vibrations of voice, psychic vibrations, he definitely indeed has a very healing voice, and it's a great, great energy. It's a beautiful work that you're doing, Mr. Yanni, and I commend you, and I salute your spirit, and I'm glad that I found you through Rose and know about you, and I will definitely look into your books and cassettes, whatever you have available, and listen and learn more. And it's a shame that you had to go to Pennsylvania to look for a psychic development group when I had a class for 40 years I taught out of the Insomnia at a Carnegie Hall office building, New York Studios. But you know what? When the student's ready, the teacher appears, and you found the right teacher or teachers, and you're on your own spiritual path. But you're doing a wonderful job. And Rose, you know, I love you, and I love your show. But this, by far, tonight has been one of the best topics. I'm really enjoying it immensely.
Joseph,
Go ahead. You wanted to say something, Mel?
Yes, because you know why this is one of the best shows I've had?
No.
Because Yanni is a fellow Libran.
Oh, that's why. Oh, you know, I got a soft spot in my heart for you, Librans. I owe you a karmic debt, you know that. I have the dragon's head in Aries. But nevertheless, I had a cup to fill with you, Librans. But you're wonderful people, and when you're positive, as you are, you're the best. You're the best of the zodiac. So, again, I listen to your show. I love it. I get so much out of it, and I salute your spirit and your, you know, and keep up the good work. And you've made my evening. You've made my day. Although I'm positive always, and I'm and you touched on something, Yanni, was so profound and so true to me. I've always lived my life in the eternal now, like yourself, although I had a very loving mother, didn't understand her psychic little boy, didn't believe until she saw through the years different manifestations of who I was and what I became. But I've always lived in the eternal now, whether it's my gypsy blood, my gypsy soul, or that's just how we live as all many people. But anyway, you did the right thing, and you're the man you are today, and God bless you, and keep up the good work. I'll leave you now to continue, and I want to listen to you. Are you on until 10:30, Rose, or what?
Yeah, we're on until 10:30.
Okay, I'm going to continue to listen.
All right.
Thanks,
God bless
you.
You're welcome, sir. Bye-bye. It was a pleasure listening to you. Bye-bye.
God bless you. Okay.
Yes. That's why
the
show's
great,
Johnny.
Yeah, you know, synonymous word for Libran.
Uh-huh.
Is neurotic. Never mind, I didn't say that.
Oh, my God. And I thought I had gotten rid of all of that.
Oh, and that's, that obsession to balance things.
Yeah,
you know,
well,
I said
to someone, you know, I used to be a control freak. And then I stopped and said, wait a minute. I think this is kind of like alcoholism. I don't think you ever were a control freak. I think you're just like, hello, my name is Rose, and I'm a control freak. And, you know, I'm not doing that anymore, but I've got my control freakiness under control. Oxymoron, but anyway.
You're no longer a control freak. You're just a freak. No, right. You're a Greek like I am. Never mind. That was just
you're
a
freaky
joke,
Greek. Oh, God. This is a whole new rabbit hole.
What were we talking about? Is there anything I'll let you lead it here. I'll find some other string to follow here, whatever you want to do.
Sure. Let's see. What did I want to ask you? How would you guide someone, or what kind of advice would you give to someone if they say to you, well, you know, I find meditation to be very difficult. I don't think I can do it. How would you tell them to start? I know how I tell my students to start, because I know when I mention meditation, everybody flips out. But what's your advice to just start a starting meditation to get your feet wet, so to speak?
Well, there are two things there are a number of things I do. One, I really help people understand this is a life skill. Don't think of it as meditation, because then you're going to have woo-woos with it or all kinds of other things around it. It's a life skill. And then when you say that to a lot of people, they go, oh, another skill to make my life better. That's very different from doing something they do in India, you know, or doing something weird. So, okay, it's a life skill now. All right. So, you know, in terms of what to do, I've kind of described two things, but then I'll also share another one or two. One is that whole piece that I was saying earlier, to stop. Let me step back. Meditation is not just simply meditating for 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes an hour, contemplating your navel, looking at a candle, counting your breath. That aspect of it that, you know, is important to do, and I'm not messing, you know, I'm not trying to make a joke about it or suggest that it's not valuable. It's very valuable, because it'll change all kinds of things within you physiologically. And I want to add right here that it only takes 3 minutes to literally change the chemical composition of your blood from one filled with stress hormones to one filled with relaxation hormones. It only takes 3 minutes of quieting the mind to be able to do that.
So I never knew that. And I have to tell you, you know, I have this meditation thing on my iPhone for when I'm out and running around, and you can program how many minutes you want it to, you know, time for. And I generally like to do 10 minutes a day if I can't 5. And then there are some days where I'm like, I can't do 5, but I'm going to do 3. And I always feel like I'm cheating myself with this heck is 3 minutes?
Yeah, I would say people do 5 because you need to slow down. Then you do get into it for 3, and then you come out of it for a half a minute.
But
yeah,
3
is all you need. Is in that amount of time, you literally, you know, can and will and are changing the stress hormones, turning them off. They just get eaten up and they're gone, and you've got the relaxation ones running through you. And what needs to be said to people to help motivate them to do this is stress hormones are catabolic, which means they eat you up inside out. In your brain. That's what I, you know, try to get people to understand. But the relaxation hormones are anabolic, and they build you up and they heal. And you can reverse heart disease, you know, if you do this stuff enough. You can reverse all kinds of things. I'm not suggesting do that and not do other things, but it can.
Right, they're like, don't just meditate and never see a doctor.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, I mean, a lot of physical problems are just caused by, you know, poor breathing. But anyhow, your question was what, you know, so one, to motivate people to, it's a life skill. Two, to understand you don't have to be the Buddha guy or Buddha gal, you know, that kind of sits there for hours doing this stuff. Though that's fine, believe me, that's very fine that you learn how to and can do that. But you don't need to start there. Also, when you are starting, you know, you don't shoot yourself in the foot by saying you're going to get up at 4 and do a half an hour then, and then you're going to do another half an hour at lunch, and then you're going to do another half an hour when you get home from work. Because all you're going to do is sleep through all three of those or sit there and dump on yourself for not being able to do it. Okay,
right.
So let's switch out of that one. All right, let me say another thing. Most meditations, when you start to do them, well, I don't know, should I use this word? Suck. Because you're sitting there and all you're hearing is your chaos going on. And you're going to yourself, wow, this is meditation. All I'm doing is my to-do list and my fears and my angers and my whatevers. And I go to them, that's a great meditation. Because what you've done is you sat there and listened to yourself. And now you realize you're certifiably insane. And what do you want to do about it? Do you want to stop that? Or do you want to let it keep going? Do you realize how much stress that's causing you? Do you realize that it's chewing away inside out in your body and that you're going to lose years because of it, or at least quality of years? And they go, oh, okay. So just learn to observe that chaos, and eventually you can detach from it. I haven't even got the time here to go, we've only got 15 minutes. But I want to just say to people that if that's all you get in a meditation, that's good. You did a good job. Good job. Because you see it, and the more you see it, the more you realize, wow, I want to distance myself from it. And the more you witness it, then the more you step back from it, the less it happens, not only in your meditation, but in your life. And then eventually it's like, oh, here's the drama again, right in front of me in my life. Here's the drama again in my head. I have a choice to ignore it, or switch it, or to get into it. Do I want to watch that soap opera again today? Or do I want to kind of just go out on the beach and look at the ocean just come in? You know, do I want to go watch that? Or do I want to go just enter that drama again? Which one do I want? And what meditation does is it helps you to slow down enough to make choices about the thoughts and the feelings that you're having. And that was one of the biggest things I learned. I can choose my thoughts. I can choose my feelings. And so just for a moment, asking yourself those questions and or just breathing, consciously breathing for 3 to 5 minutes, you count your breath. See if you can actually count 10 full breaths in and out without losing track. And then that's a meditation in itself, right there.
The third one
I would give people to do that's real simple, take you 5 minutes, and I'll tell you what the two is I gave you. One is stop and ask yourself, am I relaxed? Am I breathing easily? Blah, blah, blah. Second one, count your breaths. See if you can count 10 full breaths without getting lost. And if you do, then just scream at yourself and tell yourself you're useless. No, just start all over again until you get it. And then even if you never get it, well, you will get it eventually. It doesn't matter. Just do it for a couple of minutes.
That's exactly what I tell my students. They say, well, how do I meditate? I said, look, just do the breathing meditation. Inhale, exhale, and your mind is going to be going crazy. If you get the first inhale in all the way without having anything come to mind, you're doing great. But
exactly.
Doing it over and over again until you get to that point where you can, like you said, where you can do it for 10 breaths, you know?
Right.
The other thing is words, because I remember I got yelled at by my own spirit guides a long while back, and I no longer do it. I would run around going, oh, my God, I'm so worried, and the word worry would go over and over again in my mind, and finally they said one day, will you stop saying that word? And I'm like, okay. Can I say I'm concerned? And they're like, yes, you can say you're concerned, but take that word worry and throw it out of your vocabulary because of the energy the word creates within your own aura, so to speak, in your energy signature. Worry causes a frenzy, you know?
Yeah. Well, that leads to the third exercise or meditation is, you know, it's an effect of mantra, but you just sit there or just do it when you're in the car or, you know, you're in a subway. Well, I'll give you my subway story, but when I used to work in New York and travel into Manhattan every day. But let me give you the other exercise first. It's just simply repeat on your in-breath, I mean, say on your in-breath, I am, and on your out-breath, at peace. At peace. And you just keep repeating it. Or I am love, you know, I am love, you know, I am whatever you want to am.
Yep.
And then the second part of it is the am that you want to be, whatever. And just do your best to repeat that. And you see, the whole point of being in a meditative state of mind and or it is a life skill, it's not something you do for 5 minutes or 10 or 20 or 30. It's something that becomes a lifestyle, not just a life skill. And you just keep repeating this, I am at peace. I am on your in-breath at peace in the out-breath. And that's, again, making a choice. You know, instead, like you were saying, instead of choosing worry, you know, you can choose what? You know, you can choose confidence. You can choose trust. You can choose peace. But you choose. And again, the thing that really was profound when I, you know, as I got more into meditation is I get to choose, you know, my thoughts and my feelings. That is how I can be a master of my life. You know, it's not what comes at me. It's how I choose to respond to what happens, you know. And that determines the level of mastery that I attain in my life. You know, and so is it a challenge? Yeah, it's a challenge all the time. But, you know, it's like the Buddhists say, you know, you bake bread starting from the new each day, and you never know whether it's going to rise and not be burnt and be right or not. But that doesn't matter. You just do it every day. You know, and let me give you two more stories, one a Buddhist story and one my New York City subway story. And if there isn't time for them, zip my lip. One of the things I got to do, a blessing I had in my life, was I ran around the world for about 7 years organizing conferences for religious and ecumenical leaders, interfaith conferences. This was in, when the heck did I do this? Kind of the late 70s through the mid-80s. I really ran all over the place, and I got a little burned out doing it. But a blessing, I really went around the world. It was a blessing was meeting the people that I met. and who were just wonderful people. And I remember this whole series of Buddhist monks who would come to different events. I mean, these are events that went on all year long, different ones in different places, so it's a lot of different people. But I would sit with them because they were always laughing and smiling, and they were always interested in me. They weren't focused on themselves like some of these egotistic idiots.
Egotistic idiots?
A bunch of those running around.
Right.
And these guys were just, you know, wonderful. And they were just so warm and embracing. And there were young ones and old ones, and I would talk to them and I'd say, how do you guys get, I wouldn't exactly use guys on them, but how would you get along, how do you get along in the monastery? You know, and one of the young ones says, those old guys smell and they stink. And the old guy laughs and he says, and those guys don't know what they're doing, they're idiots. You know, I mean, I'm paraphrasing it all, but that's, you know, because that's not exactly their language. And then they just laughed, you know, mm-hmm. And then they said, you know what? We saw all those things that are wrong with each other, but then we chose to just focus on what was good, you know, and to focus within ourselves in what was good and to see the good. And so that's another meditative technique. Not Pollyannish, not in the denial. You know, when stuff happens and stuff's a four-letter word and someone's throwing stuff at you, you got to call them for it. You know, no BS around that. But in general, it's kind of not exactly that. And when I say stuff, I mean real heavy, nasty, stupid stuff. You call them at it. But mostly people are just being themselves, and they're sometimes insensitive and whatever. If you continue to look for good, you will see the good. If you look for the flower in the desert, you'll find it, you know. But if you're looking for the sand and thinking that's all there is, that's all you'll ever see. If you think there's no water in the desert, you won't find it. But if you know there is, you'll be led to it. So too with all this, the meditative mind chooses what it's looking for, what it's looking at, and what's important to it. And the more it does that, the stronger it gets at doing it, and the more it sees what it's looking for, and the more it experiences that, and the more it attracts those who are like that, and the more its life becomes that. So anyhow, that little story. And if I have a minute more, I'll give you my New York Buddha, my New York subway story.
You've got 5 minutes more, so yes, and I want to know the New York subway story living in New York.
Well, I was raised as a New Yorker and damaged by the Hoax, and whatever. And and I lived my first, 23 years there. I went, through high school and then college and grad school, whatever. Then I finally left. And then I came back. At that point I was married, my wife and I don't know when it was. Yeah, mid-80s. Yeah, when I stopped doing this running around the world doing the conference stuff, I came to New York. And I was really serious into meditation. And so what I would do is, we lived in Queens, and I had a commute into Manhattan to 14th Street, where I worked. And my wife as well had to go all the way down to Wall Street where she worked. And so the only same way during rush hour to deal with the subway, at least is what I found, is I would meditate. So at the time, the only thing we had were Walkmen. And even that was pretty radical. So I got some meditation stuff on the Walkmen. And we were at the first stop in Queens. And I would get on there, and I'm a 6'2" guy, so I knew where to stand and how to use my size to get a seat. And I would get a seat, and I would sit there with my Walkman, and for 35, 40 minutes, all I did with all the chaos, all the smell, all the insanity, I would just sit there with my Walkman and meditate. Okay. And it's not easy to do that even with a seat in the car, in a subway.
No.
On the way home on 14th Street, trying to go back out to Queens, there was no subway. I mean, there was no seats. I would stand, hold on to the rail, have my Walkman on, and meditate all the way through with my little Walkman on. And I got to the point where it was like nothing was happening. It didn't matter how bad it smelled. It didn't matter how hot it was. It didn't matter that we were actually there an hour that day because the train wouldn't move. It didn't matter anything. And, you know, so it's like I was able to just choose what I focused on. And it was such a profound experience to realize. And then there were days when the Walkman didn't work because the battery ran out, you know, or something happens, and it didn't matter anymore. I could stand, you know, in the train with, you know, squished people all over the place, and I could be in that place, in that space. So the whole, again, the point I'm making here is we get to choose, okay? And that the drunken monkey mind, as the Buddhist Hindus refer to our, the Western mind or the busy mind, can be, and you can make the choices you want, and you can experience the life you want to experience. It's just a matter of realizing you can, and then making the willful effort to make the changes that are necessary. And what it requires is you're taking the time to quiet your mind, to open your heart, and to realize that, yes, you are your most significant other. And who are you spending the most time with? That you, that self, that capital S-E-L, or everyone else in your life, or all the characters, all the dialogues, all the monologues, all the stupidity that goes on in your head? If you sit long enough, you know, and again, have a quote-unquote bad meditation, and listen to the stupidity, to the projections, to the fears, to all that stuff, and go, oh, my goodness gracious, you don't have to listen to that again. And I learned I never had to listen to my mom again. You know, I never had to listen to the eighth grade teacher who told me I was a dumb Greek who didn't know how to do anything, and why don't you go open a window? That's all you're ever good for. You know, I don't.
That sounds so familiar.
Well, I was in a special class, you know, for smart kids, and I didn't do squat, you know, so I guess she thought she had a right to say that to me. I didn't really care because I didn't, to me, you know, it's so funny. Everyone got all up in arms about it, but I didn't even really care, you know.
Right.
It didn't even matter to me. It just later people told me, you know, how, you know, even the principal, I mean, you know, and I was going, well, I don't really care, you know. As far as I was concerned, I was having a good time. I didn't want to study. I wanted to play sports. That was important to me. So call me what you want to call me. Okay, I can open the window better than anybody else. I was stronger than anybody else. Anyway, whatever. So anyhow, I don't know why I babbled that story out. But again,
I don't know. There's a reason for it. Yeah, I mean, there's a reason for everything. I would like to thank you for being here with me tonight. And
thank you for inviting me.
Everybody, Yanni's main website is www.insideoutjourneys.com. His book sites are Magical Keys to Self-Mastery.com and Intuition is easyandfun.com. And you can definitely find Yanni on Facebook. Look for him, Yanni Maniatis, on Facebook. And you like his page and website and everything. He's wonderful. And I'd like to thank everyone who's listening here. And I will see you around Facebook, Yanni. Again, thank you so much. Blessings of love, light, and healing always. Have a
thank
lovely
you.
Weekend. All
you
right.
Too.
Take
Bye-bye.
Care.
Bye-bye.
Good night, everybody. We will see you again next week. And same time, same place, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. At Violet Reiki Radio. We will let you know what the subject matter will be very shortly, hopefully by the end of this evening. And thank you all for listening. Bye-bye. Much love. Namaste.